From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, activist Erin Brockovich joins us. Her new work, Rock Bottom. Get ready for that. And by the way, this is the start of that magical 2 weeks, fun, festive holiday time as we head toward 2012. Here's what's happening. Well, over the weekend, Kim Jong-il, North Korea's longtime leader, died of heart failure. He was 69. And a special broadcast from the North Korean capital, state media said that Kim died of a heart ailment on a train due to a great mental and physical strain on December 17th during what they call a high-intensity field inspection. It said an autopsy was done on December 18th, fully confirmed the diagnosis. South Korean forces on high alert with an increase in its military capability as the death of the North Korean leader spurred fresh security concerns in the tense region. And apparently now his son, Kim Jong-un, is taking over. Greg Hunter, of course, expert in news, USAWatchdog.com. What do we know about the son, Greg?
Well, the son is reportedly 28 or 27 years old, which gives a lot of people around the world some creepy feelings, especially for a young guy with zero military experience, sitting atop of a very repressive regime in North Korea with nuclear weapons. Now, so far, it doesn't look like the military is on high alert. The Pentagon and our forces are not on high alert over there. They expect the transition to be peaceful. But there's also word that there's going to be people jockeying for position. Now, Un is going to be taking over, but they say that his uncle, Jang Song-taik, is going to be helping out behind the scenes. He's going to be really being the puppet master while basically Un gets on-the-job training. A lot of people think that they're not necessarily a lock on power long-term. Short-term, the military is going to line up behind them. Short-term, it looks like it's going to be a peaceful transition. Some people say that this is something that should put a lot of consternation in the region and other parts of the world. However, there are other people say that, hey, we should reach out to them and see if we can open a dialogue with North Korea.
Well, that may work. Now, remember, though, what happened to Egypt's young boy king, King Tut. They did away with him, didn't they?
Well, yeah, and this guy is not like he's, some hardened, he's not like he's Anwar Sadat when he came to power, some hardened military guy. He's a young guy, even though he's a four-star general, it's been reported. He's got zero military experience, so he's going to have a hard time, winning the respect of the military, and he may have a hard time winning the respect of the general population, although they don't vote for people over there. But the wild card is, what are they going to do with him? Is he going to be able to step up to the plate and eventually take control at a pretty fast pace? Are they going to use him as a front man and, they're going to puppet master him? Nobody really knows. But this is a country that has a very repressive regime that just test-fired a couple of short-range missiles off their coast, and they have nuclear weapons. So
yes,
this is a wild card.
We'll watch it. Greg, you have a great Christmas. You and your family will be in touch with you soon. With funeral parlors overwhelmed, authorities in a flood-stricken southern Philippine city organized the first mass burial of some nearly 700 people who were swept to their deaths in one of the worst calamities to strike the region in decades. I've gotten lots of emails from you about Art and his family. I am told Art is in the States and is far away from that situation there. The fire that broke out in a Cairo library that houses thousands of rare documents raised concerns over the government's and the Army's ability to protect historic sites at times of upheaval and drove several experts to warn of a possible intervention by foreign entities to preserve the heritage at risk of these archaeological tremendous finds, manuscripts, books, priceless maps. Who knows what's happening there? A Brooklyn man repaid the kindness of an elderly woman who hired him for odd jobs by first stealing from her, and then he burned her alive when she fired him. Accused killer Jerome Jerry Isaac, a 47-year-old, was reeking of gasoline when he turned himself into the police more than 8 hours after the horrific torching of the 73-year-old churchgoer Dolores Gillespie. Prince Alawid bin Talal, the Saudi billionaire and an investor in some of the world's top companies, has bought a stake in the microblogging site Twitter for $300 billion, gaining another foothold in the global media industry. Alawid, a nephew of Saudi Arabia's king, who has estimated by Forbes this year to have a fortune of over $19 billion, already owns a 7% stake in News Corp and plans to start his own cable news channel. Lauren Weinstein, of course, expert on the internet with us. So is it worth a $300 million investment, Lauren?
Well, it's about 3% of Twitter, as I understand it. And that would be, a reasonable size strategic stake. It's not going to give him controlling interest or anything like that. And as you noted, he is well known for investing in media companies and technology companies of different sorts, and does have large stakes in Citigroup and Apple and GM and things like that. I think he's the 26th richest man in the world. I think for Twitter, the question that has come up on the web is, related. This was inevitably going to come up related to Saudi Arabia's human rights records,
right?
Which is not stellar. Recently a woman was sentenced to 10 lashes for driving. Now, King Abdullah did reverse that. He did cancel out that that sentence, but he's 87 years old. He's not going to be around forever. There have been some improvements for women, in the kingdom recently. They, in terms of an announcement, they'll be able to do some voting and run for some offices. But overall, it could still be viewed as a very repressive regime. And I think anyone who takes a large stake, and even if it's only 3% of the company, $300 million is still not chump change, at least, not for you or me.
Is it worth that much money, though?
Well,
Twitter, really?
Well, the thing about Twitter is that at this point, it's still privately held by a relatively small number of private investors, so they don't have to report their revenue. As a company like Google would, for example. So it's hard to know where Twitter really stands in terms of their overall profitability. So whether or not it's a good investment in the long term is hard to say. I personally like Twitter. I mean, I use Twitter a lot. I think what Twitter is trying to do right now is they're trying to cushion themselves so that if they have this kind of funding from private investors, it holds off the day they have to do an IPO and then lose some of their autonomy. And I think that's why they would take this money. But you are going to be judged by your investors one way or another. Presumably, Twitter gave that a lot of consideration. But on the web right now, there is a lot of discussion about this, as you'd imagine.
All right, great, Lauren, and happy holidays to you, my friend. Thank you. An Australian man says his pet lizard is better than he is at playing games on his smartphone. Philip Gith's pet bearded dragon, Crunch, uses her tongue to snap up on-screen insects in the Ant Smasher game. And Crush has now become an online celebrity after a clip of her gaming was posted on YouTube. They call her Crush or Crunch, whatever she is. She does a better job than he does on video games. Up next, Chris Clark joins us as we talk about globalization. We've talked about it on this program before, but is it getting closer? We'll talk to Chris in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Chris Clark, freelance writer, researcher. He's got a degree from the University of Michigan Business School. Previously worked as an analyst for a Fortune 100 firm. A native of Michigan, like I am, he is currently based in Switzerland, where he consults for a nutritional research company. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Chris, welcome to the program. How are you?
Thanks a lot. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you with us. And great job, by the way, the triumph of consciousness, overcoming the false environmentalism and laptop media and global government. What are your thoughts about this globalization, Chris? It's active. They're going fast. Give me your take.
Yeah, well, we've definitely seen a quickening in the last couple of years. It's something that's actually been in the works for quite a long time. I mean, in my book, I trace it back. Well, I cover like the last 100 years of this movement and the players involved, and basically the main thrust of this movement is to kind of transition from a world of nation states, sovereign individual nation states, and gradually into a world of regional governments, and then ultimately into a one world government with a global currency and a global legal system and a global military, which is interesting because a lot of people, when they see all the destruction and wars in the world that we have today, that comes to people as like an idea that, oh, maybe it wouldn't be so bad, you know, to have a global government. Everybody would be friends. We would have no war, and it would be happy and a peaceful thing. But actually, you know, that's the whole trick of it. Is like, you know, it's presented in a way that, you know, it could be good, but when you see the people who are actually involved with it, and you know what they have done, and their Machiavellian type of approach to, yeah, to bringing this together, you know that that's not what they're going for.
No, you're right, Chris. You know, on the face of it, it sounds like Star Trek, the Federation. How nice this would be. All these countries get together, no more wars, no more fighting. If there's a disagreement, they just settle it nice and peacefully. But there's another agenda here. Most of the people, as you mentioned, that are trying to get this together, these people are strange. They're greedy. They're manipulative. They're power mongers, aren't they?
Oh, they're absolutely power mongers. And they're, you know, Their whole agenda is, I mean, their reason for trying to put together a world government is because, you know, they want to take away our individual civil liberties. And, you know, actually their biggest obstacle to that agenda is the U.S. Constitution. And that's why you can see that the Constitution is under such great assault, especially just over the weekend. We're now essentially under martial law with this new NDAA. Which I don't know if you covered it on the program.
Oh yeah, we sure have.
It's outrageous, isn't it? I mean, it's like now we can just be associated with a terror group, and whatever that means, you know, nobody has to provide any evidence or any proof. So all of a sudden we're you know, indefinitely detained and no right to a judge or jury or a trial of our peers.
I find it interesting that the Republican presidential hopeful Ron Paul, who's a great guy, is now, you know, either first or second in most polls. And, you know, he's opposed to the Federal Reserve. He's opposed to globalism. He's opposed to, you know, martial law. I wonder if a guy like that, Chris, can truly get the nomination in this kind of world. What do you think?
Well, it's amazing that he seems to be, I mean, the people really seem to be supporting him. And, you know, Ron Paul is not just some kind of phenomenon that's just shown up overnight. Like, you know, he's been around for a couple of decades in the Congress. And, of course, he ran for president in 2008. So it's a grassroots type of movement, which is getting more and more popular. And you can see now he's the number one in the polls for the Iowa caucus. He's in first place. But the media is so manipulative. You know, you go on like Fox News, and I was watching a clip the other day, and they were saying basically, well, you know, if he wins Iowa doesn't really count. You know, it's a fluke. That's what they were saying on Fox. So, you know, they're just so desperate to discredit him, and that's been the story all along. But I think this is kind of working against them, because the more and more people hear this message on the media, like, oh, Ron Paul, he can't win, and he's out of line with the Republican Party or with the mainstream, and you know that they just put this message out and they say he can't do it, and then finally people are like, well, why can't he do it? And you know, his ideas are actually good, and you know they do make sense, and you know they are in favor of the Constitution, and that's what he purports to represent. So, you know, with Ron Paul, you know what you get. You know, he's very clear. So
he's right there. You know, and prior to his announcement to run, he's been on our program, Chris, a couple times. And I mean, he comes on, he, you know, takes phone calls, he does whatever he has to do. Now, your work, Triumph of Consciousness, there's been a lot of works out there on globalizing and in putting together this one world government. What makes this different?
Well, I was looking at a big picture perspective of how this agenda is being imposed on us. And the one thing that I noticed that you know, there's many tools in the bags of the globalists of how they're trying to impose this agenda. But one thing that I noticed that nobody had really been writing too much about was the way that they are using the environmental movement as a tool to present this global picture. So I looked at the history of the environmental movement and the parallel history of globalization. And actually, what happened is that the people who we know as globalists essentially hijacked the environmental movement and started misdirecting it. So my book is essentially this parallel history, and the last part of it looks a lot into the media, and because when you come to the conclusion that, you know, that the environmental movement has been hijacked and this globalization movement is happening, the next question is, like, why don't we know about it? So I wanted to write about how the media is also a big player in this, and that's why, essentially, we don't know about it except for shows like this and alternative media.
So. Chris, why is this climate scam so important in their scheme?
Well, it's really important because they need to create an enemy, and there's a group called the Club of Rome, which is a think tank which has been around for several decades, but it's one of these elitist think tanks which writes documents and write white papers for the globalists, because essentially they are globalists. If you see people like Al Gore and people like the different royal families of Europe, a lot of their people are Club of Rome members. And the Club of Rome, actually, they wrote a book in 1991 called The First Global Revolution. And they were talking about how in order to advance social agendas, there always needs to be an enemy. And this is right after the fall of the Soviet Union. So they were saying for all of the years during the Cold War, we had the Soviet Union as an enemy to kind of mobilize the populations. But they said, okay, now we need a new enemy. And it was really interesting because they said the enemy doesn't always have to be real. It can be created for the cause. They said this is it can be a manipulated enemy.
Are and they making money? Is there somebody making money on the climate gate?
Oh, well, sure. I mean, actually, the U.S. government spends about $4 billion a year just on research, giving research to scientists who will do research about global warming, and of course the UN is the U.S. is the main funder of the UN, and the UN with their IPCC, that's the group, the main international body which is presenting this view of climate. So and then of course there's people like Goldman Sachs, who, you know, if you look under any rock of globalism, Goldman Sachs always seems to be there. So they're definitely involved in the picture, because, I mean, essentially what they want to do is they want to impose this cap and trade system where the amount of carbon that is permitted to be emitted by a company will be capped, and if you're a company that produces more carbon than the cap, you'll have to go onto the market and buy carbon credits. So the carbon credits can be bought and sold. And, of course, that opens the door for a huge amount of market manipulation by
market manipulation,
who are Goldman Sachs. But, they're heavily involved. I mean, they, back when Hank Paulson was their CEO, he wrote their environmental policy, which, you know, normally Goldman Sachs, they're completely opposed to all sorts of government regulation. They want to do everything without any regulation. But he was urging for really strict government intervention and regulation of climate. And that's odd, because why would Goldman Sachs want regulation?
Mm-hmm.
But so that was their official position. You know, at that time, also they had Mark Patterson, who's currently the chief of staff for Tim Geithner. He was one of their chief lobbyists, and at that time, well, in 2008, actually, Goldman Sachs, they had spent $3.5 million lobbying for climate issues via Mark Patterson. Now Mark Patterson is in the White House, and Goldman Sachs, for example, they were also a huge owner in the Chicago Climate Exchange, which was going to be the forum where they would exchange carbon credits. But actually, to their detriment, the Congress was not able to, as of yet, to implement this.
Interesting. There's always money behind it, Chris, isn't there? Always.
Yeah, you just follow the money. Exactly.
Unbelievable. Stay with us. We're going to talk more about your work, The Triumph of Consciousness, plus we'll take some phone calls with you when we come back in just a moment. Chris's website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now. And if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. I shall be right back. Don't touch your dial. Well, do you feel like time is running out and you don't know what kind of gift to get somebody for Christmas? You might want to consider letting them join the Coast Insiders Club. For just less than 25 cents a day, you can pick up a membership for someone you care about or even yourself. Our goal, $2,000 for the month of December, and you can become a member of the Coast Insiders Club. You simply just go to our website right there at the top. You'll see the little Coast Insider button up there. Just hit that and fill out the information and be a member of the Coast Insiders Club. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're talking with Chris Clark, who's out there in Switzerland right now. His work, The Triumph of Consciousness. We'll take your calls this half hour as well. Chris, give me your thoughts on why you're opposed to this globalization.
Well, the globalization that is being offered up by the people who are trying to implement it, I mean, it's essentially an authoritarian form of government, and that's been confirmed. That's been confirmed just by looking at the statements in the books that the people who are implementing it have said amongst themselves. There's a lot of people know about Carol Quigley. He was the historian of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is one of the main drivers of this agenda. Mm-hmm. He happened also to be the mentor of Bill Clinton, and who Bill Clinton actually acknowledged in his when he was sworn into office in a speech that he made. But anyways, Carol Quigley, in his book, he wrote about how this is an authoritarian form of government, which is going to be a new form of feudalism, a neo form of feudalism, and that's why I'm opposed to it, because it's essentially an anti-human. It's an anti-human rights agenda, and it's a way of consolidating and transferring power to a very small amount of elite people.
Chris, we have always heard that these elitists would love to reduce the world's population. We've heard numbers from the 6.7 billion where we are now down to 500 million, which seems ridiculous.
Exactly.
But have you heard that too?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's a big section of my book. I mean, and even in like the 1996 UN Global Biodiversity Report, they talk about how they need to bring it down to 1 billion. They say we need to bring it down to 1 billion if we want to live at North American standards, or 2 to 3 billion if we want to live at European standards. But yeah, there's all sorts of numbers, but in generally, all of them, they want to drastically reduce world population. And the inevitable question is why? And for me, it's quite clear that the main reason that they want it is for their own administrative convenience, because it's much easier to manage a population which is much smaller, and so for that reason they use the environmental movement to put out the idea that overpopulation is a very serious threat to the environment and to food resources, and that's one of the main themes. Besides the alleged threat of man-made global warming, overpopulation is the other main action point that you see time and time again through all of the big environmental groups.
How would they reduce the population, Chris, if they had their way?
Well, I think the idea is to do it very gradually and very slowly, so that they don't want people to catch on to what they're doing, and they always want to have plausible deniability. So there's many ways to do that, especially by addressing the food and the water that we drink. Bertrand Russell, of course, in one of his books, talked about how they could use diet and also injections. He talked about injections, which is, of course, vaccines. So there's many ways of putting toxic chemicals into the food and water supply. I think I talk a lot about false environmentalism, and that's not to discredit the entire environmental movement. I think I very much support real environmental issues, and one of them, which I question why it's not why it's not brought up so much, is the issue of bisphenol A, which is the type of plastic which is used in all of the water bottles, all of the plastic food, and this is a known endocrine. It messes with the hormones, and this is a reason why. It can do a lot of harm to fertility. There's hundreds of studies showing how it affects both male and female fertility, and this should be a huge environmental issue. The CDC has even done a study where they found that 93% of Americans test positive for bisphenol A in their urine, and even at very, very small amounts, it does significant damage. So that's another way they can do it, by addressing the fertility, to bring down the fertility rate.
All right, those of you listening worldwide, you can reach us via Skype at George97313, or, of course, our international line is 1-800-893-0903. Let's go to William. Let's go to Katie in Wichita, Kansas, to get us started, east of the Rockies. Hi, Katie. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, Chris. Hey. I am a documentary junkie, and I watch a lot of documentaries about the environment, and I just wanted to know if you have any, if you recommend any documentaries that are more truthful than others, and then maybe share with us some documentaries that you believe are more dishonest. And I'll take my question off the air. Thank you.
Okay. What do you think? What's out there, Chris? Have you studied any of these documentaries out there?
Yeah, I've seen quite a few of them. There's a pretty good one called The Great Global Warming Swindle that talks about the myth of anthropogenic global warming. There's another one called Fall of the Republic, which is an Alex Jones film, and that one talks about a little bit more about the political the reason for advancing this global warming doctrine. Specifically, Webster Tarpley was talking about it in that film. And the ones which are a little bit more disgenuine, I mean, just watch like anyone on the History Channel or on the National Geographic. I mean, all the ones that are presenting. I haven't seen any film which is coming from one of these big institutions where they present the idea of global warming in a fair and balanced way. One of the main ideas that they always try to push is that there's a consensus of scientists. They always use this word consensus, which is trying to tell us, you know, like maybe 99% of all scientists agree that this is the case, and it's just a total farce, because there's a huge community of scientists who are questioning this, and it's just totally disingenuous to say that there's a consensus. So, but that's the view that's presented in these types of documentaries.
Chris, I've been doing this program so long, I'm now believing that these conspiracy theories that are out there, where there's smoke, there's fire, I think most of them have credence. What do you think?
Yeah, well, a lot of them do, and there can be some false type of conspiracy theories which are injected into the public domain to kind of discredit the real ones, and that's actually an agenda which is been talked about by Cass Sunstein, who is of course the White House information czar. And before, when he was at Harvard, he wrote a document which is public on the internet. You can Google it and find it. It's called Conspiracy Theories, and he talks about how dangerous conspiracy theories are. And how they're infecting the public mind. And one of the action points that he recommends is that the government actually does what I just said, that they infiltrate conspiracy groups and they inject false conspiracies to discredit the ones which are real. So I think they're totally afraid of people kind of waking up and finding out that conspiracies are true. I mean, it's just, I mean, even Cass Sunstein in his document, he acknowledges that, well, some conspiracies are true, like, and he talks about Watergate, and he talks about MK Ultra. He said, well, these ones are true, you know, the ones like global warming, and I think he talks about 9/11, but other ones, he says, you know, these ones are just totally absurd, and we can't have the public being tricked by them.
Now, you're in Switzerland because of work. You're not hiding, right?
No, I'm not hiding.
Okay.
You can't hide. I mean, this is a global agenda.
It's everywhere.
Everywhere you go, there's nowhere to hide.
Let's go to South Carolina. Let's go to Matt. Hey, Matt, welcome to the program. I think. Are you there, Matt?
I'm sorry.
No. Sorry, Matt. Had to let you go right there. Clipped you right at the end. Let's go to Riverside, California. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah. George, I appreciate you taking my call. And Chris, sure thing, I'd like to ask you a question about Jeb Bush has been in the news here in the last few days. And I'm just wondering, you know, I followed this thing of world government back. I got involved after the Waco thing with not a militia, but a group out here in California and in Arizona. And I followed this and ran into a lady named Joan Vian. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but she wrote a book called The Global Straitjacket. And she followed the UN meetings and traveled all over the world, meeting leaders from all over the world. And she wrote this book and wrote several others as well, but she passed away last year. And she tried her best to get the word out on this. And anyway, the Jeb Bush, getting back to Jeb Bush, the Bush family seems to be involved in this. As much as I liked George Bush when he ran, I really was behind it, but and I liked him at first. But his dad coined the phrase "the New World Order," and I mean, it just seems that they're with. As far as I'm concerned, what we're doing right now, our army's been doing for the last 20 years, is preparing the Middle East for world government. Somebody's got to do it. They can't get outer space people from outer space to come down here so far and get this job done. They got to use what's here on this planet, and they're using the United States government to do that. As far as I'm concerned, they're behind John Kennedy was where this started for us, his assassination. They took Robert out because he was no doubt going to be the next president, so they had to get rid of him. And it moved slowly for those years after that, very slowly, but it's really picked up speed in the last 20 years. And the immigration into this country, of course, we're going to become the Americas, according to Joan Vian's book. They're dividing the world into three or four major parts and currencies. And that's all happening. We're referred to as the Americas, if you look in the paper.
Well, and they're going to do that, Tom, for a short while until they can do it all globally. Isn't that true, Chris?
Yeah, that's how it appears to me. I mean, I think they don't want to like scare the sheep too much. You know, they don't want to like just all of a sudden you wake up and the next day it's like, oh my God, it's global government. They want you're going to still have all the nations, but. But, you know, the nations are not going to have any sovereignty anymore. And that's what's happening in Europe now, in Greece and in Italy, where you're just having the different technocrats, which are being placed into the leadership positions of the government, and the democratically elected people are being forced out. So slowly, you know, it's going to happen through economic means, through via the IMF and the World Bank and the Fed, and you know, you're still going to have nations, as you know, it's going to appear like you have nations, but the nations aren't going to have any rights anymore. Like that's what we were talking about before, that we're losing more and more of our rights, which are guaranteed under the Constitution, under the threat of terrorism, and under the threat of man-made global warming. And
can it be stopped, Chris?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it certainly can be stopped, and I think that's where the Ron Paul movement comes into effect, at least in the short term. And just the fact that so many people are interested in his message, that shows that, you know, I mean they have to. The only way the agenda can advance is if people are kept in a state where they don't understand what's going on, and they're too totally seduced by TV and by celebrities and by sports and all of these distractions, which are kind of keeping us from the really important things. So, but the fact that people are waking up, I think it certainly can be stopped. And you see all around the world, you know, a lot of these revolutions and these protests are to some degree manipulated, but I think the spirit is very true and very genuine. People are fed up and they're tired of it. So I mean, it's for sure it can be stopped.
Let's go to Nancy in Oregon. Welcome to the program, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks, George. You did a great job, Chris. I just wanted to add a little bit because in the early 90s I worked with government and private industry, and your perspective about the environmentalist movement playing into this is absolutely right on, because they immediately saw the nexus of government and private industry in the hydropower industry in the U.S. because it is government and private, and they coerced out of Bonneville Power Administration a minimum of $500 million a year to start out with, and that was about 15 years ago, so I don't know what it's up to now, but people don't understand what they're doing, and there are very few serious and dedicated environmentalists that really have the environment at heart. Their initial motivation was to try and make sure our hydropower rates were at least as much as the East Coast hydropower rates, because the hydropower system is extremely cheap to run. So I don't know how to get message and get people out, you know, to understanding this. And Chris, what you're doing is absolutely critical. And George, thanks for having him on the show, because it's really important.
It sure is. Chris, so give me a little overview perspective of what other signs will be out there so we can all say, this is really moving ahead. We got to do something about it. What will we see?
Well, in terms of the environmental issue, I mean, if you see cap and trade being passed, and if you see it even coming up as an issue, that's going to be a huge red flag. I mean, if Obama has another 4 years, I think that will be another agenda item that he will go after. But yeah, I mean, there'll be so many red flags. Like now you see with this supposed end of the war in Iraq, you know, we can all celebrate because the war is over. And the next day in the AP, the story is U.S. will build up troop presence in the Middle East. So they're just going to move the troops out of Iraq and just put them in other places in the Middle East. And, you know, the big threat, of course, is an impending war with Iran. And, you know, if that happens, then, of course, Russia and China are more allied with Iran, and the whole thing can spiral out of control. So,
and I would have thought North Korea would have been next. The South is on warning right now, as a matter of fact. They've got their military at high alert. I think a lot has to do with what this kid is going to be doing. And I'm not so sure the military is going to allow him to stay in power. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, who knows what the situation is? I mean, the whole story is coming out of state-run media, so I mean, who knows if he's actually even dead? But assuming that he is dead, yeah, I don't think they're going to let 27-year-old or 28-year-old guy run the country. But
no, they'll appoint him to some nice little power position. But I think the military will step in, and I think that's probably what concerns people.
Exactly.
Chris, where do you get your book, The Triumph of Consciousness?
You can get it on Progressive Press. That's a publisher, progressivepress.com, or you can just get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any big website.
All right, my friend. You be with us anytime we need you as a resource. We shall tap into you, Chris Clark. Up next, the real-life Erin Brockovich joins us. We're going to be talking about some of her latest work and some of the incredible things she has done in the past right here on Coast to Coast AM. And in our last hour, we will also take phone calls, give you an opportunity to talk with her as well. And if you need to email me, it's George@coasttocoastam.com.